This Sunday should be a very good occasion for us to share the Dhamma. That's why initially I was given some title by Dr. J. Then I looked at the title and said, why not we modify it a bit so that I will cover what you want to cover. But I put it under the significance of Vesa. Then he told me some of you are new. Yeah. So maybe I make use of this occasion to explain to you the significance of Vesa, then why Buddhism. In fact, I add in that word, why Buddhism. Means why we choose Buddhism. And for those who may not have much understanding of the uniqueness of the Buddha's teaching, which we call Buddhism. But the Buddha actually, when he came out to the world to proclaim the teaching, he called it the Buddha Dharma. He used the word Dharma. So Dharma is the teachings of the Buddha. But there is another meaning to Dharma, which is very important. Dharma basically is truth. That's why the essence of Dharma that he teaches is the Four Noble Truths. And these are true that can actually make us enlightened or become noble ones. So during the time of the Buddha, noble ones are called Aryas. That's why we have in the teaching, the Aryas are the enlightened disciples of the Buddha. But the Pali word Arya means noble ones. Why are they called noble ones? Enlightened one. Noble one because they are very noble in all aspects of life. They understand life, they know how to live life, and they know the secret of life. And they are very noble in all their approach to life. Means they have noble understanding of the nature's law that governs life and existence. Then they also have noble qualities. Because they have this noble understanding of life, means they have right view, wisdom, understanding. That's why they can live life. Then they are very noble in their ability to communicate. That's why we have noble speech, noble action. Then they carry themselves very well through noble qualities like right thought. From right thought, it conditions right speech, right action, then the way they live their life is all in accordance. That's why we have right livelihood. And they are very noble in all aspects. We call it communication. To communicate, we must act, we must speak, we must talk, we must actually share our understanding and develop harmony. Cultivate the teaching. Develop wholesomeness, avoid all evil. Then from there, meditate to purify our mind. So for that, they also have the noble qualities of mindfulness and samadhi. They train their mind and develop this ability to meditate, to develop the wisdom. Of course, before that, they also have the noble quality of the four right effort that constantly allow them to purify their thought process. So for those who are familiar with the Buddhist teaching, the four right effort is very clear. So that explains why the teaching, the Dhamma, is very important. So now we come back to the significance of Vesa. So most of you have heard of Vesa, isn't it? It has been celebrated worldwide by almost all Buddhists all over the world. And it has been like accepted public holidays in many Buddhist countries. Except this year is a bit unique. We have the Lunar New Year, the Leap Year. So different countries celebrate Vesak on different days. I was told Malaysia, we go back to tradition, we celebrate today 4th of May. But Singapore, they chose if I'm not wrong, next month, second of June, second of June, then Thailand, third of June. But don't worry about the dates. Understand? More important is the understanding, the faith. Because the significance of Vesak is very important. Why is Vesak so significant, so special? And what is your understanding of Vesak? Anybody want to try? What is your understanding of Vesak? What does Vesak commemorate? Yes, the three trisacred occasions of Sakyamuni Buddha. We commemorate this unique birth, which is here, symbolized by this one. Then enlightenment. Then you have another one, his Parinibbana, passing away, where he lie down. The three portions. Why are these occasions so significant? Because in the year 1950, they had the first conference of the World Fellowship of Buddhists. I think it's Sri Lanka, if I'm not wrong. When they held that, they made the decision to actually define Vesak as a holiday for Buddhists. And I think most Buddhist countries accepted it. So 1950 was the first year that Vesak was officially recognized as what they call a very important date for Buddhists to commemorate the birth, enlightenment, and the Parinibbana of Lord Buddha. I will explain why these 3 days are important later. Then, not only that, in the year 2000, 50 years later, United Nations at its headquarters in New York celebrated Vesak officially at their headquarters. And that makes Vesak even more significant. Then, if you are born Buddhist, you can be traditional Buddhist, where you are from a Chinese family, or maybe based on Chinese tradition. Most of us would call ourselves Buddhists because our forefathers are Buddhists from China. But basically, Buddhism, which is the teaching of the Buddha, has a lot of meaning and significance. Then, of course, as we migrated overseas, we are overseas Chinese. Some have changed religion, become Christian or even other religion, but it's not important. Whichever religion that you can find true can let you understand life, make your life better, improve your life. That is something more important than what religion you are or what faith you choose. Now, I always say it's not the religious label that make you spiritual or holy. It's the understanding of that religious teaching that transforms you individually into a human being that can be a blessing to all. The first quality of a good religion is it must allow you to understand life. Then it must allow you to live life so that your life is in accordance with that teaching. Then it will bring forth a lot of wholesomeness, a lot of goodness that make you different, transform you individually, character-wise, personality-wise, understanding-wise, transform you completely to be a very, very, they call spiritual living being or human being. Once you have that, then whatever religion you have is of not importance. Because spirituality is about understanding from the heart. It's not the religious label. You can claim to be a Buddhist, But if you do not understand the Buddhist teaching, you do not understand the significance of Vesa, then you can never be a true Buddhist. Just to be worthy of the Buddha, you need to at least understand his teaching, heed his advice. That's why Vesa is a very sacred and important thing, because it brings forth to mind all Buddhists, especially devout Buddhists, to actually renew your faith in the Buddha and his teaching. That is also an occasion for wholesomeness. We can do a lot of good things, wholesomely. That is also an occasion for us to renew our faith, like what you all did. Early morning, you gather, then you help out, you do your activity, then you do your chanting, and certain temples, they have more elaborate ceremony, like the hoisting of the Buddhist flag. Yeah? Then they have their chanting. Then they also have their Dhamma session, like we are having now. Then, while you are performing all this, it's an occasion for both of them, because you can do all the 10 perfections that brings forth merits, or the Buddha called it the 10 meritorious actions, not perfection, sorry. The 10 meritorious actions that can bring forth a lot of meritorious friction of what you do. Take for example, if you come to the center or any Buddhist temple or way place, the first thing you do is what? You go to the altar, you pay respect. So respect is a meritorious action. After you pay your respect, what do you do? You chant, isn't it? Salutation to the Buddha. Then you take refuge. You renew your precept. Renewing your precept, keeping your precept, is another meritorious action. So respect, keeping precept, then normally you will develop some form of meditative training or meditative mind. That's why you will be able to develop the third meritorious action by actually meditating. It can be for 5-10 minutes if you have metta session. Well, I saw in the back you have a chant. The merits of doing metta, the 10 benefits of doing metta is behind that. Then after that, you can develop what they call Dhamma session. By listening to the Dhamma, it's also meritorious. When you listen to the Dhamma, you rejoice. It's meritorious. Then you straighten your view. It's also a meritorious action. Then you share merit, you transfer merit. Then in between, you offer, like today, vegetarian lunch dana to the public and also to members who come. So these are all meritorious actions. Then you provide service to the Buddhist community, like all the EXCO members, all the supporting Aloka Buddhist Center members, they come and help out. Everyone has their place or duty to contribute to. And these are the 10 meritorious actions that you can develop to strengthen your cultivation, your practice. That's why it's not only an occasion for us to develop all this very good quality of what we call faith, wholesomeness. When you listen to the Dhamma, you learn the teaching. The first phase of Dhamma is to learn the teaching. Then you put it into practice, that is the second phase. The Buddha, under the teaching, they got different Pali words for it. The learning of the teaching is called Pariyati, where you can develop through listening. Nowadays, you can also read up. You can also Google the internet or listen to recording and all those things. Then you can have your Dhamma discussion and all those things. So this is where you learn the teaching. Then to put it into practice is the next phase. There are three stages of cultivation, the Buddha said, when you cultivate Dhamma, you have to go through the three type of wisdom that can arise through cultivating what they call the three learnings or the Four Noble Truths. The Four Noble Truths are the essence of the Buddha's teaching I explained earlier on. When you understand this Noble Truth, it will make you Noble Ones or Enlightened Ones. And what are these Four Noble Truths? These are the essence of the Buddha's teaching. And this essence of the Buddha's teaching is the one that you need. Well, once you understand this Four Noble Truths, it's like you understand the secret of life. Like he summarized to us all of life, mundane and super mundane. Everything that you get involved in life, they are all clearly explained. Yeah. And once you understand the secret of life, you know how to live life in accordance with that teaching. Then you can avoid a lot of unnecessary suffering, problem, karmic repercussion or negativity. Then your life will become different. You will develop a lot of understanding, a lot of wholesomeness, a lot of blessing that can actually bring forth the spiritual life, the holy life. Where most of the time you are like very blessed, very lucky, you got no more problem. So this is the beauty of that Four Noble Truths. Then when you understand this Four Noble Truths, it not only transforms you, it can free your mind, develop the ability to become enlightened, awakened. Enlightened means, once you have this wisdom, born of this enlightenment, you will be free from all suffering, or life misery and affliction. That's why it's very, very unique. So you can develop this teaching, it can help you a lot. So now I will come to the significance of Vesak. The three very auspicious occasions, or we call it the tri-sacred occasion of the Buddha. The first is his birth. Why do we commemorate the birth of the Buddha? Because he is a very unique being. He is not only enlightened, he is fully enlightened. And because of his cultivation, his perfection over aeons and aeons and aeons of cultivation and perfection, he actually became a Samasambuddha. And his birth is very unique. The whole universe actually rejoices. And those who can have the ability to witness that birth is really very, very unique quality and parami. And because of that, his birth bring forth the arising of the Buddha to bring forth the teaching. That's why his teaching can come to this world is because of his birth. So we commemorate his birth is because of his uniqueness, his quality. He is not only enlightened, he is fully enlightened. And you can see at the time he was born in this world, on this planet, he is the wisest and the most virtuous living being ever to be born. And to have such a great being to be your teacher, to be your guide, you will have a lot of faith in him. So your faith and gratitude towards him for bringing forth this teaching will be very, very strong, become unwavering. And after his birth is of course to commemorate his enlightenment. At the age of 35, underneath the Bodhi tree, he developed the meditative training that he connected and he recalled everything that he has developed from his past perfection and became a fully enlightened Samasambuddha. So that enlightenment is very unique because he recalled all his perfection, his cultivation, his teaching. That's why he can summarize all his understanding into just the Four Noble Truths, which just now I already brought up to you, but I didn't go specific to it. So this Four Noble Truths That is the essence of his teaching. He was able to summarize them because of his great cultivation and perfection. So after his enlightenment, he came out to share the teaching. And the first teaching that was proclaimed is called the Pavatana, the first sermon, Dhammacakka Pavatana Sutta. Just how you are chanting is something else, The first sermon, a lot of devotees, they also chant Dhammacakka Pavatana Sutta. And that is the most important teaching. Yeah, that is the essence of his teaching. Where he proclaimed the middle path, he proclaimed the Four Noble Truths and its three tenets. And inside that sutta, he said, even he himself as a Samasa Buddha, before he became a Buddha, or before he became enlightened, he himself, he said, as a Bodhisattva in the early stages of cultivation, he also need to understand this Four Noble Truths in its essence, the three turning. Means Four Noble Truths plus three turning, three times four is the 12 mode. When you develop this, you develop the three type of wisdom. They call it the first turning wisdom, Sutamaya Pada. Through listening to the sutta, you develop the wisdom. Then Chittamaya Panya is the second turning wisdom. After you hear, you put into practice, you contemplate, you reflect, you inquire, you stabilize your understanding. That is the second turning wisdom. Then after that, you silence your mind, develop mindfulness, awareness, or sati, leading to samadhi. Then you cultivate the third turning. He called it the wisdom born of meditation, Bhavana Maya Panya. Bhavana is the meditative training. Panya is the wisdom that arises. So the third turning wisdom is very penetrating. We are this directly pointing towards the nature, the awareness nature, the sati, the mindfulness. No more thought, no more thoughts. So now I will zero in to the Four Noble Truths. Why is this teaching so unique? Why I call it the secret of life? Well, he summarized all of life into this form. And it was so beautiful. The first time I read about the Four Noble Truths, I remember, in 1971. That time I was still in Form 5. The first edition of What Buddhists Believe by our late Chief Reverend K.C.C. Dhammananda. The moment I read the Four Noble Truths, a very simple edition, I threw away like anyone. That's it. No need to search anymore. This is the one. Because I said, nobody in this universe can summarize all of his understanding just in the Four Noble Truths. The whole of life, both mundane and supramundane. I say, even if I have realized his enlightenment of his teaching, I cannot summarize it that way. But he can. That's why these Four Noble Truths, they are very unique truths. They are truths that can make you noble ones or enlightened ones. Very unique. So what is this Four Noble Truths? The Buddha say, in this universe, not only our planet, when you live life, you will encounter the realities of life and existence. So under the first noble truth, it says there is a first noble truth that explains the noble truth of dukkha. So dukkha is a very unique Pali word. I write this word down. Most people define dukkha as suffering or unsatisfactoriness and all those things. So this one, some call it suffering or unsatisfactoriness. But this word, the Pali word of dukkha, is a very unique word. In fact, they use a lot of English rendering, but it can never fully describe what dukkha is. So the Buddha said, this noble truth of dukkha is to explain to you about the realities of life and existence. He said, when you go through life without the understanding of his teaching, you will suffer. So this is what we call prevalence of suffering. So first noble truth, prevalence of suffering. Suffering is everywhere if you don't have the Dhamma understanding. That's why this one is very important. If you don't understand this, when you are born into this world, you will suffer without knowing what suffering is. So the Buddha actually summarized the first noble truth under the eight reality. He said this eight reality will cover all aspects of your mundane life. They are all covered under this deep reality. And if you live life long enough, sooner or later, you will confront them. But if you confront this in reality without the Dhamma understanding, you will suffer. That is what the first noble truth is. So what are the eight realities? Yeah? The first one you all know that. Yeah? Birth, old age, sickness, and death. Okay? So this reality, even though we all know, one day, everybody, after you are born, you will get old, get sick, and die, isn't it? But Chinese has a very funny, they call what, a superstition. They say, of all things, church, don't talk about that. So they avoid that question, no? But later on, as they go through life, as they experience more and more of what they call suffering, then they start to look at the teaching. Because to them, why do you say birth is suffering? No reason in it. Everybody look forward to be father and mother, yeah? Newborn, full moon day or something. The birth process, they never reflect. Now, maybe the mother will know more. Understand? Then, if the birth has complications, it also leads to suffering. Understand? Then, we birth come what? Old age, sickness, and death. That's why birth is suffering. This is human nature. This is the reality of the physical form that goes the way of nature. So, not only when you are born in this world, you suffer. You have to go through all the other realities of life and existence. The first reality, birth, we already discussed. Second reality is what? Yeah? Going through the decay process, aging process. Maybe when you are young, before the age of 30, it doesn't really mean much to you. But when you hit 40-something, 50, those who hit 60 and beyond, they will know what aging is. Your senses start to fail you. And a lot of things you use to enjoy and have the ability to perform, you start having problems. Understand? Like now, I'm almost 70. Yeah? So, birth leading to old age, sickness, and death. Sickness and disease is now very common. A lot of traumatic disease. Yeah. And not only that, actually it covers injury. Understand? Sickness, not only physical sickness, injury. And nowadays there are a lot of traumatic disease. Yeah. Like heart attack, yeah? Stroke, yeah? Kidney failure. Then the very new disease, HIV, obviously. Then nowadays they even have this COVID-19, yeah? Pandemic type of disease. And as you go through life, you will have to confront them. Then when you confront old age, sickness and death, death can happen in many ways. Yeah? One of it is through disease, through old age. The other one is what? accident, nature's calamity or disaster, like war, riot, even kidnap, then sometimes it's because of what they call tsunami, earthquake, building collapse, building failure. And these are very common. So death leads to separation, understand? Separation of the loved one, separation of the breadwinner, separation from your possession, your wealth. So all these are part and parcel of the reality of birth, old age, sickness, and death. Then the other reality is that as you go through life, if you come out to work, or when you have relationship and family, when you are with people whom you don't like, what happens? You suffer with them. When you cannot get what you want, you suffer with them. Then the other one is separation from your loved ones, from your prized possession, from things that you hold on to dearly. It will lead to suffering. It will lead to affliction, unhappiness. Sometimes it can cause misery, sorrow, lamentation. Then you develop depression. And all this are life reality that we have to confront. And maybe as you go through life, you will understand more and more of this. Then the last one is, in short, the Buddha says, it is due to your delusion, sakayati, that conditioned you to grasp and cling onto this physical body and mind, thinking that it is real, it is you, that conditioned the five grasping aggregate that conditioned your suffering. And this is why you need to meditate. You need to meditate. You cannot use your thought to think about it, develop the knowledge of it. If you do that, it will not help you much. You may know as knowledge, but when it hits you, you cannot do anything. You still succumb. You will still be there. But you meditate and see the unreality of this form and mind. You see the universal characteristics of impermanent, suffering state, and non-self or anatta nature. Then you will understand. Once you insight into it, you awaken to it, then you realize the truth. Then, like the Buddha said, this form and mind is not self or a permanent, unchanging entity that you can cling on to, grasp on to, and hold on to and say, this is me, this is I. These are delusions. That's why, because of self-delusion, it conditions you to believe you exist. And most human beings believe you exist. Because you have an entity, the moment you are born, they give you a name, they identify you, then they teach you Papa, Mama, then relationship, everything. Then, when it comes to the teaching, when the Buddha said, this one is not you, then you say, cannot be. If it's not me, then who am I? What am I? That's why you have to meditate. When you are able to meditate with the awareness to realize the truth, then you go beyond this form and mind. Then you realize that nature within, which is the deathless element, that true nature. And that nature is not a being. It cannot come out and live life, but it can give rise to wisdom and understanding that allow you to have the penetrative awakening. That's why you can insight into the phenomena, awaken to the three universal characteristics of anicca, dukkha, and anatta, and become enlightened. Then your delusion is gone. Your mind liberated and free. Then when you don't grasp to the form and mind, this eight reality become reality that you can accept, confront, and live with it. Without suffering. And that is the beauty of the teaching. So how can we do that? So according to the Buddha, he teaches you the five daily contemplations. How many of you know the five daily contemplations? That the monk has to contemplate. Devotees have to contemplate as Buddhists. Anybody want to try? What is the first three? This body of ours? It's of the nature to grow old, get sick, and die. Correspond with the first three of four realities, isn't it? So, what the Buddha is trying to tell you is, he said, last time he also cannot understand. That's why he saw the fourth sign, he left the palace in search for truth, enlightenment. What are the four signs? An old man, then a sick man, and a dead man. Then the last one is a samana, a true spiritual practitioner, a true seeker of the truth. These first three, when he saw, he asked the attendant, why is this person like that, so sick? Then why is the person so old, so haggard, so miserable? Then how come there is a dead person? What is all this? So the attendant told him, every one of us has to go through this. If we live long enough, you can become like that. Then the Buddha at that time was the Bodhisattva. He asked the attendant, you mean one day I will become like this? Very, very elderly, aging and old person. Like very, very old, aged, and the senses all like very weak already, failing people. So he said, this is madness, this I have a problem. As I go through life, I will have to confront this aging. I don't want to end up like that. And I said, no. That is misery, suffering, you know. Because he saw them in the street, suffering. Misery. Then the one with his disease is full of pain, full of what they call suffering and misery. He said, you mean one day I also have to go through all this disease, sickness, injury, and all this thing? And then they say, yes. Then he said, one day I will also die. Then he said, he got a problem. All of the things that the father gave to him, the four seasons, the four palaces, the beautiful life, everything is so pristine and so beautiful, and got no meaning. Then one day he said, I got no answer to old age, sickness, and death. That's why he left. He followed the samana and go and meditate for 6 years. Then when he awakened under the Bodhi tree, do you know how he free from this first tree? He realized his teaching that this form and mind, or we call the human being, is not him. This one is dependent originating. Condition arises, cause of the normal. That's why it's impermanent. Dependent on condition, it arises. That's why it's impermanent. It's not a permanent, unchanging entity. That's why he awakened. Then he realized this one is just karmically conditioned out for him to come to this world to perform whatever function that he wants to perform in that life of God. It's a samasa Buddha. That's why. Once he realized that, he does not develop delusion on the physical body anymore. The physical body that goes through life, that goes the way of nature, is not him. That's why he said, the first three contemplate, this body of mine, the physical body, is of that nature to grow old, get sick and die. For he has not gone beyond old age, sickness, and death. That this one is not him. That's why he's free. But you must meditate to realize this, understand? Not just through theory like what you hear from me, then go back, go and use your memory, and of course it will help. You reflect, you contemplate, second turning wisdom. It helps a bit. But it's not penetrating. The third turning, you must silence your mind, develop awareness, and find out whether it's the truth or not. Whether your physical body is really impermanent or not. If you silence your mind, you can feel every aspect of your five aggregate of form and mind. The physical body and the consciousness, they are ever changing. Do you realize within your body, your pulse of life, your vibration inside, they keep on moving, arising and passing away, arising and passing away, your heartbeat, your consciousness, then your breath, in and out, everything within your physical body, the cells, they continuously grow, decay, and renew. Then the heart, through the life force, they continuously pump and send the blood to nourish your other organs. Then any of these things, if it doesn't follow nature's condition, it will fail. That's why you will have disease, then Dr. Jantari or the doctor will know. Then they will actually diagnose you, then prescribe medication or cure to help you. So if you understand this reality, then you do what you have to do. We are not only you are subject to all age, sickness, and death, every living being in this universe is subject to it. And if it's not you, why you worry about this body getting old, getting sick and dying? What you need to do is develop the understanding to actually live with it. If you take care of it, it will last you longer, isn't it? It will last you better. If you abuse it, don't take care of it, what will happen? It will decay faster, get into trouble faster. It's just like the vehicle and the driver analogy. The car is like your physical body. Understand now? You want to go around, that car take you there. The consciousness trap inside is like the driver. This one says, okay, I want to go home. I want to go to ABC. So this one, direct. So the car and the driver, you can see that the two entities are different. But when the consciousness is trapped inside, you cannot see it. You think they are one. That's how the delusion comes in. So what happens is, like the car, if the driver is not the one that is with the understanding and with the moral understanding and principle, if he violate all the traffic rules, the nature's law, what happened? Red light also go. Then quarrel with people, bang. The car sure get affected, isn't it? Damage, isn't it? So when the car get affected, normally what you do? You claim insurance, isn't it? If you got no insurance, you panic. But when the consciousness trap inside the physical body get damaged, no insurance to claim or not. That's all. You have to pay for your medical bill unless you buy life insurance. That one only cover you certain. But you cannot detach from that suffering now. Because when this one is injured or this one is sick, you feel it now because the consciousness trap inside, because of your delusion, that craving force will cause you to attach and cling and worry about it getting old, getting sick and dying. But if you meditate, you can break free. Then you know the body is the body. Means, I do what I have to do. I don't complain. I don't argue. I don't get into trouble anymore. I calm myself down and tell myself what happened. Because I didn't understand all this, that's why I led myself into all this problem. Once I understand all this, like the Buddha said, this body of ours is of the nature to grow old, get sick and die. These are nature's process. Common reality to all. The one that understands does not suffer. The one that doesn't understand suffers. Understand? That's the only three. Then after that, the fourth contemplation is very important. He says, all that we think we own, our loved ones, our possessions, our wealth, our property, and everything that we hold on to dearly, like our reputation, our whatever success, or all those things that we give meaning to. Once you hold on to them, he said, you will have problems. Because they will separate from you sooner or later. Because these are reality. Because all these that arise are conditioned arising entities. They can be your loved one is because of biological connection. Then they can be your possession, your wealth, your property, everything. It's because you work towards it, you develop the success, and it becomes like a fear that you own. But then the Buddha said, when conditions cease to be, all this will disappear from you. Means separation is a reality. How is it possible? It is possible, well, the first thing that will happen is our breath stop. Once our breath stop, our entity erase. If you don't exist, then how can you own thing? Understand? It's no longer yours. That's why the society recognizes you have to pass it on, either as inherited, or if you don't have a will, they will have law that allow that distribution. If you have a will, then no problem. There will be grant of probate and honesty. Then it's also no more use. There's a separation. It's a reality. And most people suffer a lot when there is separation. Especially your loved ones separate from you. Maybe through death or disease or whatever. Then when you are going through your career or your whatever, what they call economic cycle. If you make a wrong decision, economic crisis when it hit, it can bring forth very severe bankruptcy. Your whole investment, business can fail. And overnight, you lost everything. That's why during the currency crisis, 97, 98, a lot of billionaires, Malaysians, they were wiped off. Of course, some of them survived. But most of them, businesses all wiped off. So when you confront separation, whether loved one or your possession or your wealth, your business or whatever, it can be very traumatic. Okay? So this part explains to you why the Buddha said, these five daily contemplations, which I have covered the first four, is very important. And the last one is even more important. And this one is directing you towards understanding life. He said under the fifth daily contemplation, we must contemplate everything in it. All living beings, he says, not only human beings like us, we, including all living beings, are born of our karma. Heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma. And we are what we are because of karma. What does this mean? Base your entire life, each and every one of you, is dependent on karma. Do you see? We are born of it, we inherit it, heir to it, conditioned and supported by it, and we are what we are because of it. That's why there is a teaching. Where Sakyamuni Buddha teach, he said, you reap what you sow. Do good begets good, do evil begets evil. You plant the seed of evil, you reap the fruit of evil. That's why all the suffering that you confront, you cannot blame anybody. Because you don't take care of karma, he said. That's why it come and hit you and entangle you. You become afflicted, suffering arises. So this last contemplation is very important. This is what the message of the Buddha is all about. When he arrives as a Samasa Buddha, he proclaimed this teaching, the Four Noble Truths. He said, first, there is this first noble truth that reveals to you the prevalence of suffering, the eight realities of life and existence. Each and every one of us has to go through life. Then when you confront them without the teachings understanding, you suffer, which I explained. So the last one is where the secret of life is. If I know my life is dependent upon entirely 99.999% on karma, what must I do? What must you do? Take care of karma, isn't it? How do you take care of karma? How do you take care of karma? Follow the advice of the Buddha, Dhammapada verse 183, to avoid all evil, do good, and purify the mind. And what is that under the Pali Chanting? Sabba papasa akarana. Kusalesa upasapada. Sachitta pariyotapana. Etapa buddhana sasana. The Buddha said, Sabba papasa, all evil, you have to avoid akarana. Means you must not commit evil. And what are evil? Under the teaching, he said the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion are evil. That's why you have to avoid all evil by keeping the minimum 5 precepts. Because these precepts, according to the Buddha, they have major evils. Once you commit that, you commit major evil, karmically, it will bring about downfall, it will bring about suffering, misery, and you will confront this in reality without the wisdom and the understanding, and you will be afflicted by that. That's it. But if you have the understanding, then you don't have to go through this, because you reap what you sow. So if you live by this teaching, you keep the precept, then you don't commit major evil. This karmic negativity, like the first precept, we undertake the training rule to abstain from killing and causing harm to fellow living. If you don't do that, karmically, other living beings will not harm you, will not kill you, will not cause misery to you. But if you do that to people in the past, whenever there is condition in the future, when you arise on that life, you will reap what you sow. The second precept also says it. The third, the fourth, and the fifth. The first one especially. Who will kill and who will harm? Living beings that have selfishness in them, that has delusion in them, that is full of violence, anger, hatred, emotional negativity. That's why they will kill you. If you have all these evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, you will break the precept. And that is very serious. These are major evil. That's why to avoid all evil, like you chant, just renew your 5 precepts, is to protect you and protect others. When you undertake the training rule to abstain from breaking all those precepts, means you are mindful not to do it to others. And by doing that, others will not be harmed. And you yourself, when you develop these precepts, is a meritorious action. Others will not harm you. Then this one becomes your merits, your blessing, your goodness. That's why they say, if the precept, you don't worry about evil. You don't worry about those unseen beings and all those things to harm you. In fact, your 5 precepts, if you keep it well, it can protect you. In the teaching, the Buddha said, they asked him, what is the highest protection? The Buddha replied, your virtue. Understand? Your virtue is what? Your goodness, your kindness, means your precepts. Then the second advice is, kusala sala, upasampada. Kusala are your wholesome action, speech, and thought process. Wherever there is condition to develop the right speech, right thought, and right action, you must cultivate, even right livelihood, you must develop that. By doing that, you not only avoid evil, you cultivate wholesomeness, which is blessing, goodness, like today we saw, the 10 meritorious actions, you can do, you can perform that. Then the 10 meritorious actions also part of right speech, right action, right thought process, and right livelihood. The way you live your life is very important. If you understand this teaching, you take care of karma, you become beautiful. Then the Buddha said, if you avoid all evil, do good, you got a lot of merits, a lot of blessings. But is it enough to give you the good life? To prevent you from suffering? The Buddha said it will help you a lot, but it will not prevent you from suffering. Because when you confront the 8 reality, some of the 8 reality, like all is sickness and death, with merits and with what they call blessings, it cannot help you on yourself. But this one needs wisdom to free you. This one needs the third turning, meditative turning, or at least the second turning, the contemplative one, which Sakyamuni Buddha did under the Bodhi tree. That's why he awakened the free. So the third advice is Sachitta Pariyottapana, means you have to purify your mind, you have to meditate, you have to develop mindfulness, awareness, to develop this awakening. Once you do that, your mind liberates and free. then no more delusion. Like the Buddha came to know, this form of mind is not him. And you really realize it or not, not as a knowledge at all. Do you see the difference? Knowledge is you think you know, but when he afflicts you, you cannot have that in yourself. That is knowledge. That is memory. But the one that insight through the direct seeing, through the meditative training, through the awakening, is not a knowledge. It is they actually through the direct seeing, the insight into it, and they awaken, and they understand it clearly. That's why after that, no more delusion. Then they actually can develop what we call enlightenment in the here and now. So this first noble truth I have covered. Then the Buddha said, not only he explained to you the prevalence of suffering, the realities of life and reason, but he under the second noble truth, he even explained to you the cause of its arising. So this second noble truth is also very important. Cause of arising of dukkha. And this cause to him is very simple, is it? Because of your self-delusion, satiety, you grasp and cling and hold. Based you have craving, attachment, born of delusion, then you get yourself entangled. If you don't grasp as a form of mind, the physical body, then you will understand all age, sickness and death pertain to this physical body. It goes the way of nature, it's not you. That's why you are not affected. But because of craving, you think this body is you, when it gets sick, what happens? You worry, isn't it? You think you are getting sick. You think you will suffer. You have to pay a lot of medical bills. You think you will die. That's where the delusion is. But if you don't meditate and awaken, based on knowledge, when you go through OA sickness and death, you come and tell me whether you can handle it. If you can handle it, it's not to you. Means you have the doctor. You understand. You can pay. So the cause of arising of suffering is very important. Separation also says, because deludedly, you grasp, you cling, you think your loved one. You know what the Buddha says? This only the fools lament, he says. You know what the fool laments on? He says, the foolish people, they will say, my son, my wealth, my possession. Yeah? They think these are real, understand or not? Because you own them, you earn them, and you give birth to them. Of course, you say, my son, my wealth, and my whatever possession. The Buddha said, those who say that are foolish people. He said, only the fools lament. Why? He said, because that very body of that person is also not his. Understand? You know, it is not what you think. That one is impermanent, not a permanent unchanging entity, not you. Then how can you own anything? So that delusion, once you understand, it becomes very different. So this cause of arising of suffering is very, very important. So once you understand that, separation to you is no more a problem. If I don't exist, how can my loved one exist? But there is such thing as a law of karma in life. That's why the Buddha said under the chanting, the salutation to the Sangha. Under the salutation to the Sangha, the enlightened disciple of the Buddha has four noble qualities. The first four stanza you chant, Supatipanno, Bhagavato, Sarvabhasaku. What is that? Upright conduct. Then the second one? Supatipanna or Ujjupatipanna. What is that? Of upright conduct, of good conduct. Then Nyaya is wise conduct. The last one? Samichi is what? Of dutiful conduct. You do your duty. And that is what the Buddha meant. That form and ma is subject to karma, that's why there is a duty that you have to perform. You cannot simply do things. You violate the karma, you get into trouble. And karma recognizes relationship. That's why you are patricide under the five heavy karma. Your karma recognizes all this within the conditioned world. So you have to do your duty. This form and mind got its duty towards the nature's law of karma. So you cannot simply neglect and do things. So the teaching teaches you to understand this and not to be deluded by what the world is and what people do and what people say. Understand? So this part of the teaching is very important. Then after that, the third noble truth is where the solution is. The Buddha said there is a third noble truth that explains clearly to us that suffering need not be enlightened. Enlightenment in the here and the now is possible. So this enlightenment in the here and the now is very important. So this is what Nibbana is all about. Nibbana can be realized. So this is where the solution is, isn't it? Suffering may not be. Enlightenment in the here and the now is possible. Means what? Means you need not suffer. With the Dhamma, when you confront the first noble truth reality, the eight realities of life and existence, you need not suffer. To realize this enlightenment is very important. That's why we must meditate. We must silence our mind, develop the awareness until the cessation of form and mind arise. But then this one just tell you that this is possible, but he didn't teach you how to do it. So the fourth noble truth is where the answer is. So this fourth noble truth, the Buddha said, if you cultivate this noble eightfold path, it will lead to the end of all suffering. So this is where the cultivation is to be focused on. So this noble eightfold path is the meditation as taught by the Buddha. And these are the eight noble qualities that make you enlightened one. So if you do whatever meditation, if it doesn't bring you back to the cultivation of the noble eightfold path, then it's not the meditation as taught by the Buddha. We are very clearly under the fourth noble truth. If you cultivate this noble eightfold path, you will bring about the end of all suffering. You cultivate the Buddha Dhamma to develop enlightenment, means to end all suffering. So you have to have the noble eightfold path to be noble ones. Then only you can have that wisdom to break free and become enlightened. That's why there's no more suffering. And this is why I say this is the secret of life. When I understand this, I understand life, I can live life. I only have to take care of karma, develop the learning of the teaching. So the learning of the teaching got three phases, just now I covered two. Pariyatti, Patipatti. Pariyatti is the learning of the teaching, Patipatti is putting it into practice. Then you develop the enlightenment, doing it. Phase three Dhamma is Pativeda. You get to reap the fruit of your cultivation or your hard work, your cultivation. Then that third phase of Dhamma is the most beautiful phase of your life. You can live the life of enlightened being under that third phase. That's why this teaching is very unique, very beautiful. And it is something that living being must strive on to develop. Otherwise you come, you become miserable. You suffer for nothing, and you develop all those afflictions without you understanding why you get yourself entangled. And the teaching is given free. And it is something that is very simple and very direct when you have the understanding. So with this, I think maybe I will end my today's share. What's the time now? Oh, 3:30, just nice, yeah? About 1 hour. Okay, so If you all have any question, you may ask, okay? So, I will stop here. Eh? Or you want me to continue on any other aspect, you can. Let me know. Did I miss out anything on significant of this stuff? Why Buddhism did I explain that? Because this is very important. It's so scientific. It's not something that you believe in yourself. Then you have to wait till death only. You can know whether you really become what they tell you or not. You go to kingdom of God or whatever. Because that one you don't know. You have to wait till you die. But this teaching, no need to wait till you die. You can realize enlightenment and you know what they are telling you is all delusion. Because no one died. No one died. He know you, he know me. Well, this one is not you. That's why it's ananda, non-self. Not what you think. And this teaching is so unique. Because only the Buddha, actually, you look at all the religious teachers, what they teach is quite common. And what all evil do good. I think almost all religions has love and compassion. Then wisdom is the part that not all religions has. Of course, some claim they have their meditation too. But then you look at all the meditation they do, they are all thought-based, energy field, most of them. Seldom do you find the one that has sati or awareness base. The uniqueness of the Buddha's teaching is where he teaches sati, mindfulness, awareness, where you cannot find in other religious teachings. So far, I haven't found any. If you come across any, you let me know. I will go and read it out also, see what we have to say. But this teaching, the uniqueness is that word sati, mindfulness. Okay? Well, I have a treat. Sadhu, sadhu. And thank you for offering this. Who offered this? Can you come forward to offer? You make this? Oh yeah, I remember the spectacle. You want to come and offer? No. So that I can drink. Otherwise, I cannot drink. Because if it's not offered, I cannot drink. Don't mind, sadhu to you. And also the one who prepared is also get the new jobs. The rest also get the new jobs. Any of this. You just bring it up. You offer to me. No need that one. Sadhu, sadhu. Okay, bring it up. Then this one. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, thank you so much, Sadhu. Whoever prepared this also, my nature rejoice, thank you so much. Okay, while I have a drink, you all want to ask any question you can ask.
You're talking about the five precepts. The first precept is no killing. Sometimes in the process of our daily life, when we are doing cleaning or washing, sometimes
accidentally,
the air will be accidentally
killing.
What do you think? Is this
you must understand what is a precept. First, understand why the Buddha introduced it as a precept. Then you check the speech that the Buddha used to define that precept. What is Panatipata Viramani Sikkhapada Samadhiya? The meaning is, I undertake the training rule. Now, this word is very important, training rule. So, it's like the monk's rules. The training rule to abstain from killing or causing harm to fellow living. Means you have to develop mindfulness to undertake the training to abstain from not to do. That's why you look at the Buddhist precept, it's so precise. And then why in fact answer your question? But the other religion, what do they do? I quote one of the religions, they always use one, thou shalt not He never say undertake the training rule to abstain. But the Buddha knew there are a lot of things you cannot avoid, understand? But if you kill without intention to kill, then it does not constitute a major breaking of the precepts, understand? Like you drive your car, the flies, everything in your ministry. Then you tell yourself, hey, I don't want to kill, I don't want to on my way. You are looking for trouble, understand? Looking for existence, understand? Because they have their karma, their condition. Then you didn't do anything. You didn't have the intention, but you have to drive a car, understand? Then at all, what is important, you must have the understanding. You have compassion. You want to undertake the training rule, then you tell yourself, how can I avoid all this? The first thing you must know is, if you keep your house clean, there will be less of all this. But sometimes they are still there. You should try to save them. You can. It's not difficult. I save a lot of ants that enter my milk or sugar in the early days. Then now you keep it clean, they don't come. Then your kitchen also, like my wife know, every meal you cook or what, clean it up. Otherwise, it will attract all this. Then cockroach, all those things also say, if you keep the place clean, rubbish all clear every day. Of course, the other way is you retain metta. It does work. When you have good metta, it does work. Will you be well? Please, avoid this place. So that you will not unnecessarily, without us having the intention.
It will go away.
It will go away, definitely, because you have to try. And the other thing about precept is, you must understand what is precept. Precept is an understanding. Like, when I see the danger in breaking that precept, that's why I chant. We renew all precepts and so on. I renew my precept by saying, I undertake this training rule. This training rule has to be practiced through mindfulness, awareness. I must be aware before I break the precept. Understand? Where you have the mindfulness, it's impossible to keep it all harm. Can tell you. Take for example a mosquito. Okay? How do you kill a mosquito? You all say very habitual. Just reflect action of power, irritating. But do you know how much thing must have gone through the what they call phenomenal world's movement before that action of killing can happen? First is there must be condition for this mosquito to create the negative mental aversion or reaction. Most of the time it's aversion through what? Through memory. Then you hear the sound, or you know it has bitter glue, then you don't like. That is the aversion. That is like the sound. You're born of memory, conditioning. We are selfish. You think the mosquito is a nuisance, it's harming you and all those things. That's why you want to kill. But when you have mindfulness, you can't. Sometimes a lot of meditators tell me, actually in the early day when I try, I also do that. I say, donate blood only, man. Then if you got the time, I was developing the meditation, I want to relax and I want to know. Then later on, I know I have the metta, they don't come. They don't come. Then the other thing about this mosquito thing is, you actually must have this good vibration in you. On many occasions during the early day when I cultivate, when I have a lot of metta, I realize that even we are in the forest or in a dark area with a candlelight where we discuss dhamma, a lot of the ayamita niyamiya, they complain, "Rati, a lot of mosquito, everybody." But I don't feel it. None of them come and disturb me. No. Because when you have this vibration, these things are possible. But then, precept is to be developed to an understanding. When I understand the danger of violating this precept, that's why I undertake the training rule. I determine. So I must develop mindfulness. So when I am mindful, I am aware. Aware of what? Whatever sense contact, like the mosquito, normally is the sound, yeah, or you saw it through the sight. Then, because of habitual tendency, your wrong view, you develop aversion. But for us that have the mindfulness, at the moment, your mind stir or have the intention to kill or to do anything. If you have awareness, you will know already. Understand? Because that thing will signal you. Then at the mind level, whether you have the dislike or aversion, even very slight, you should feel. Then you have the Dhamma, there is life. Because you undertake the training rule, not to kill and not to harm. Then how can you do it? Understand? Maybe you are not serious about the precept. You only like parrot, parroting. Panatipata, Vairamani, Sikhama. But you don't mean it. Then you mean it means what? I undertake the training rule. No. Means I determine to train myself not to do it. No. Means I aware. When I aware, I straighten my view. It also has life. Understand? If I kill, there will be karmic implication. Is that what I want? If that is not what I want, then be kind to yourself, understand now. Don't let yourself be entangled with that precept, negativity. If you don't want to suffer, follow the advice of the Buddha to avoid all evil. All evil. Suffer, papasa, not avoid evil alone. So, the seriousness of understanding the teaching and the cultivation is very important. When you don't understand, you become like, mosquito only ma. You justify that. Then you are not serious. You doesn't have the ability to be sensitive, to feel. But at the moment you smash or spite the mosquito, it's a small living thing. Do you realize the shock behind it? This type of people who kill a lot of these, they will have road accident. Bam! You also got, understand that? The coming later, when you smash the small fellow, so when you are driving at a high speed, maybe accident or the big vehicle bang you, same. So if you want to end up that way, then don't have to keep your precept. Continue to be the way you are, mean, live your life either. But if you really understand life, you will never allow this to happen. Even the smallest possibility, you are one. That's why we undertake the trip. We are very serious. Now then, what happens is, after the, let's say, the hearing consciousness pick up the thing, then the aversion to kill, you are aware, you cannot kill already, understand? Then you straighten your view, you reveal love, metta, may you be well. Or at the most, you just move it away, understand? Like move it away. Like the fly come, move it away. But if like that, this you want to kill your blood, you don't like it, the aversion is still there. Means you are not mindful, you are not aware. Then what happens is, after that, let's say you miss all this, you are not mindful. Okay? Then that emotion or aversion will develop the action, the transgression. Means you have the intention to kill a bit, you don't like it. That thing, the aversion. So it will condition killing yourself. To kill, your hand must move, isn't it? True or not? You must move your hand to kill it, to smash it in. Under Kaya Nupasana, what are you supposed to do? Every action, every movement, you aware, you know, mindful, you know. Standing aware, sitting aware, turning, bending, stretching aware. That movement, when you are aware, it cannot move to kill, understand? That's why you lack mindfulness, you lack awareness. Then even let's say you miss this, when you hit, the mosquito has to be there when you can cause the killing. It's almost impossible. Four or five of these steps involve mindfulness and awareness. You cannot kill really. When you are serious about cultivation, serious about keeping the precept, serious about undertaking the training room to observe all this, you cannot do. That's why they say, even at a Sotapan level, they cannot break the five precepts. It's true. Cannot break the five precepts. Okay?
Okay. Now, yeah. Going to the precepts, I'm going to share my experience with you. I think four precepts are very important. Okay? This speech, because I think people who don't really observe their age, when they age, they just too busy.
Yeah.
And also very good. I just my Taiwan pointers died, so I can't see anymore. But at least before that, I had argument, close friend. So then after that, there was voice message scolding at me. And now the phone got lost. But the thing is, I just realized that I have this wooden bag and nail. But even though the nail is removed, the hole is still there. So that's how important the speech is. Somebody, but at the end of the day,
they always say the wound can heal, but the scar is still there. Understand? Similar. So last time there was a relationship problem among one of my classmates in Fong Hua. So that girl actually wanted to get the relationship back. But the boy, a bit of funny character, he tell the girl, he said, yeah, the wound will heal, but the scar is always there. Yeah, he was hurt by what she said. So when you live blind, you don't know the mundane dharma or the conditioned dharma within the mundane conditioned world. Your mind will latches onto the words, understand? Give meaning to all this. But when you have the dharma, you know these are words. These are reality created by living things within the conditioned world. This is not what it is, no reality. So why do you attach? Why do you give meaning? As long as you are sincere, you don't have the intention to do all this, whatever the world is, don't worry. Like the Buddha said, you cannot be free from play. The eight worldly conditions, you have heard of it, isn't it? Praise and blame. Even the Buddha cannot be free from blame. Of course, he got a lot of praises. But he cannot be free from blame, the Chincha incident and many other incidents. So this is worldly dhamma, duality within the conditioned world. When you understand, you stand above, you break free. Then, like Jayanta said, if there is condition to understand, then bring forth the understanding to see the importance of the four precepts. Yeah, the fourth precept is I undertake the training rules of telling lies. Understand? Means you have an evil intention to deceive, to cheat. You know? Under the precept is only telling lies. Understand? Like the first precept is only healing. But we should include the ennoble. Even causes harm, we should avoid. Then when it comes to telling lies, the fourth precept, we should include the noble eightfold path, wrong speech. Understand? The four kinds of wrong speeches, you need to cultivate them by avoiding them. Means, what are the four kinds of wrong speech? First one is what? Huh? No, that one is frivolous speech. Harsh speech, understand? You speak very harshly, understand? Oh, like, you don't give face on it. You just tell people all their answers. Harsh speech. Then, second one?
Lying.
Okay? Or you call it backbiting. The third one is backbiting. The backbiting is the worst. Means behind people's back, you say negative things, bad things. You, in order to instigate misunderstanding, all those things, you go and do all those things. Then there is another one, frivolous speech. They call it sweet nothing. like when you all caught him that time, you actually talk a lot of sweet nothing. You don't really need it right now. You know, that time you can promise the sky. But after marriage is another story. After marriage, like the character and the behavior, before marriage, actually the boyfriend very patient. Don't worry, take your time. Make out all after marriage. What the hell is going on? Dinner start already. Still, double A. So these are the behavior of living beings who don't have the dhamma. That's why there are certain saying in this English. There is one author. Was it Alexander Pope? He said reality begins after the first day of marriage. You heard of it? Then the other thing is, when poverty strike, love fly out of the window. So all these are saying within society that people have gone through, experienced. So what Jayanta brought out is also very good. You should focus on the four type of wrong speech, then cultivate right speech. Right speech is not easy. Wrong speech, you have to be mindful of it, you have to avoid it or abandon it. The four right attitudes are. When this wrong speech, or they call greed, hatred or delusion, when they have arisen, means the wrong thought has arisen, you must apply the first right effort to abandon it. Understand? Because that time, you don't have mindfulness. It has already arisen. It's habitual tendency. It's delusion. Your mind is so habitual, it's so irreactive. So arises already. You undertake a training rule, means the first right effort to abandon it. And to abandon it, there are five ways the Buddha taught. The first way is to think of the direct opposite wholesome thought. Like when you have anger, you develop metta. When you have metta, you cannot have anger. You can only have one mind state at a time. Then the second way is to think of the consequence of continuing with that wrong speech, means that anger, that hatred, or that delusion, that evil intent. Once you know that these are major evil that condition negative karma, so when you see the danger of it, means the consequence of continuing with that anger and the hatred, then you immediately determine not to do it. Means you abandon it. Because this is not conducive towards the cultivation or the development of the Holy Life. This is heedlessness. Through delusion, you continue to become heedless. The third and the fourth way is the meditative way. The Buddha said, when anger arrives, fear arrives, don't do anything. Silence your mind, develop mindfulness, stay with it, be aware of it. Then see what happens. What happens? Those who have done before, they will know. That anger dissolves. That fear dissolves. That craving, that emotion dissolves. Means what? It means you develop the Dhamma understanding, the wisdom like the Buddha said. Anger is not me. Anger is the dependent originating. Condition arises. Through wrong thought, wrong view, through habitual tendency. Before I get angry, there was no anger. Similarly, fear was never me. Before there is fear, there was no fear. But because the senses pick up something that trigger off the memory, that phobia, then fear arises. Means this condition arises. So if fear is not me, anger is not me, why must I push away the fear and the anger? Or suppress it, or control it, or fight it. You understand the delusion of it. Be mindful of it, aware, then see it ceases. Means the universal characteristic of anicca. They come and go, where they are dependent originating, condition arising. They are not intrinsic within my nature. My true mind doesn't have all of these. These are sankara, mundane activity, mundane mind state. So when I realize this, I don't have any more problem with fear, with anger, with hatred. Because these are conditions arising, delusion within your mundane mind. These are worldly dhamma, not the truth. The true dhamma is the awareness nature that is aware. The moment it's aware, it sees, then I realize I don't have to do anything to be free from anger, to be free from fear. I only need to straighten my view. Why did I get angry? Because I see something, I recall something that actually conditions me to have that anger and that fear. So I need to develop the wisdom to straighten my view, not to react and stir anymore. Then we recall the teachings. What did the Buddha say? Learn to see things as they are. Means what? People are just the way they are. The world is the world. Deluded people do deluded things. Foolish people do foolish things. Selfish people do selfish things. And then, I can accept, isn't it? I can accept that already. Not to say I agree with them. Yeah, they are just the way they are. So when you have this understanding, you can be at peace with everybody. Just like just now, I say the friend. Yeah? Was it your friend? The misunderstanding or whatever. Then the message comes, the voice message. Yeah? If he understands all this, then his mind is not disturbed at all. He will know these are worldly dhamma. Deluded people do deluded things. Emotional people do emotional things. They are just the way they are. We just accept the reality of the moment. Then it's a peace. A peace means you don't stir your mind. You don't react. You don't get into the argument. You don't get into unnecessary misunderstanding and conflict. Then you resolve it amicably. Through what? Through following Noble Eightfold Path. Right view, leading to right thought, right speech, right action. Then no more negativity. Understand? Then everything can be resolved amicably. Okay, you understand? Then the fourth way I haven't finished. I only told you the third way. But good enough, the third way is the meditative Dhamma way.
The first two is thought-based.
That one you can do initially, but it's not penetrative, not helpful. The one that is penetrative is the awareness of the third way. That's why you need to develop mindfulness, stabilizing to have the awareness nature. So that you can use the awareness nature to investigate Dhamma, to understand what is going on. How come there is anger, like the Buddha said, under Dhamma Nupassana, the five mental hindrance, mindfulness of the five mental hindrance. So the mental hindrance, they are sensual desire and ill will, like and dislike, pleasure. So when they arise, you must trace the origination factor. How did they arise? The formula. Like I said, before you have anger or sensual desire, there was none. It's through one of your senses, you see. And then you know this is condition arising. Then you know, you will come to know, like what the Satipatthana Sutta say, how the unerasable mental hindrance, which is sensual desire or ill will, come to be. Through your wrong view, through your senses, they arise. Then when you continue to be aware and silent, then you come to know how the erasable sensual desire or ill will, or anger, or hatred, or fear, cease to be. By not doing anything. These are dependent originating. You don't give it any more delusion. You don't follow it. It ceases to be. Then you straighten your view. You're free. That's how you trace the origination factor. Then retrospectively reverse it to right view. Then that wisdom gives rise to equanimity, the last enlightenment factor. Then during that time, you don't need samadhi to free. You, with the wisdom, you can free. Straight away, you free. No more delusion. No more argument. Okay?
This one, you can see by that place, like my sharing. But that's the YouTube. YouTube, they share all these, mostly all these Dhammas. Yeah, send the website. You can
Google this website. You Google this one, then the website will come up. Yeah? Inside there, everything is explained. Yeah? The purpose, the Kayamita shift, about us, what are our activity, then all the Dhamma book, all the YouTube video, the short video, everything is there. Then I have brought along some very useful books. Yeah? This one is a seminar book that I delivered in the year 2013 in Bangkok at the World Buddhist University, where they had a conference of, I think, I just read to you, the International Conference on Life Management with Meditation, Experiences and Success, dated 10 to 12 August 2013, held in Bangkok, Thailand. Co-organized by the World Buddhist University, the World Fellowship of Buddhists, and the Mindfulness Center. Yeah? And Brad Hill was invited to provide a seminar paper at the same seminar as a Malaysian speaker. So this book is very good. Small book, summarize to you all the teaching. Today what I said mostly is right here. Yeah? You get hold of this copy, you can understand. Then there's another one. The Essential Buddha Dharma of Lord Buddha. This one was based on a transcript of a talk I delivered at one of the house dharma in clan, one of the Kayamita there. You know the clan people, you might know Nancy. Nancy. So this one also very good. Then this one is for those who are doing the meditation, the awareness-based meditation. This unique Dhamma code is very important, straight from the heart. Eh? All the 162 codes, I think 61 or 62 codes, they were shared by me over a period of many years. Then Kayamita found it very useful, very important. They decide to seek my permission to get it printed. So it's here. Eh? Then, if you want to learn the whole teaching, this Heart Sutra book is most important. Everything is there. My retreat at Sampo Temple, almost every year I will use this as a reference. But these are all the teaching that I teach, and they put it into transcript form. It's over 15 months when I was delivering the Heart Sutra at a Mahayana temple, Vihara. Then that one is our simple chanting book. If you would like it, you can have it. Okay, these are all for you all. Alaka. What is that?
Okay. So some guest copies from previous previous here. So from Sutra and so Brightio has different books.
They are all in the website. If you go to the website, you can find them. Under the website, there will be a menu. You click on the menu, all the various title of the whatever topic will be down there. Then you click on the various title, you get to read all the things. How I was invited to start giving Dhamma sharing in the year 2004 and the conditions behind was clearly explained there. Then the attributes of Kayamita, the purpose of this website, to help all those who have the affinity and interest in developing these noble teachings of the Buddha, so that they can develop the wisdom and the understanding to be a blessing to all of humanity. They are all there. This is a very good website where all the important resources of Dhamma and the important teachings, they are all there. If you are a true cultivator, you are interested, you go into the website, it will help you a lot. A very, very complete wealth of teaching. You can also have the teachings of the Mahayana, the Bodhisattva way, they are all inside there. This one is mainly I try to combine the Theravada teaching as the basic foundation to understand the Heart Sutra, the Mahayana teaching. So when we go through this book, you will realize the Heart Sutra teaching and the Theravada teaching, they match. No different. A lot of people cannot understand. They are very confused. They think the Heart Sutra is very esoteric. Form is emptiness. Emptiness is form. Form does not default or emptiness. Emptiness. So like very mystical, but no. Through Theravada teaching, you can understand.
Okay. I was searching for a teacher that can share the Mahayana view, give some basic Theravada explanation, how can these two schools work together. And by information, share it in English, which is most of us Abhimanyu people don't really understand anyway. So Mahayana could be very alien to us. Given this opportunity for us to actually explore the other different schools and learn it in our normal baby language, English. It's very, very helpful for me. I learned it from all of you.
Yeah, especially those who don't understand Mahayana. You don't worry. You can come and see me. I can explain to you. It's no different from the Theravada teaching. It's a perfect match, exact match. Yeah. Make it a Q&A session better. So that we can have more questions, more time, so that you all can ask the questions that you have. So that you can develop better understanding. Because the Dhamma is very beautiful when you understand it. It's not difficult, not complicated. But if you don't understand, to find the truth is not easy. Because most of the Dhamma that is being taught, most of it is towards the thought-based type, scholarly type. That points towards more of knowledge for people to remember. I realize that one is not effective. It won't change you. It won't transform you. Your character, your personality, your delusion, your psychiatry is still there. Because if you don't have the awareness, you cannot understand the teaching of the Buddha. Because his teachings come from sati, awareness, mindfulness. Without that sati, mindfulness, awareness, actually you cannot even contemplate the Dhamma. To contemplate the Dhamma, you have to have the creative mind, the meditative mind, the silent mind, the awareness mind. Otherwise, very difficult. So most of it is through learning, hearing, teaching, what they call phase one Dhamma, the learning of the teaching. So if you listen, then it becomes memory. You become knowledge, you commit to your memory, then you store as knowledge. Then you may repeat what the Buddha say or what I say, but it doesn't mean you understand. Because this is what you heard. What you heard without the understanding are words. Like just now I said, your chanting, if it's like parrot who parrot without understanding, then that precept become repetitive in a sound. Like you commit to memory, you just chant because panatipata viram, like you don't mean it, where you don't see the importance of it. You don't understand it. What is the meaning? And I remember most of the time these Buddhists, most of them when I ask them, what is the four number two, especially the first number two? They tell me life is suffering. You agree the answer, right? Yeah? If life is suffering, then why did the Buddha teach you? The Buddha said, life is full of suffering. He never said life is suffering. That's why I use the word prevalence of suffering. When you don't understand this teaching, you suffer a lot. But he doesn't say life is suffering. He said, suffering need not be under the third number two. So how can he say life is suffering? If he teach you about only suffering, it's the way you are so that you are mindful of what suffering is. Then you don't get yourself entangled. Then you determine to train your mind, to liberate your mind, to be free from suffering. That's why you will go all out to cultivate this teaching. Then you will develop the five spiritual faculties to help you overcome the five mental hindrances. These are the essential dhammas that will arise. Then the importance of precept, maybe I will add in a bit more. It's inside this book. You get this book, you will know. I think you all chant this better than you will know. Silena sukanti yanti ilai. Silena boga sampadai. Silena nibuti yanti. What is the meaning? Sila is the source of spiritual happiness. Sukanti yanti. So you have sila, you are very happy. Why? Yeah, you don't violate the precept. You don't cause karmic negativity. You don't harm people. You don't cheat people. You don't have the negative karmic condition to make you miserable. That's why most of the time you are happy. Silena sukantikyanti. Then silena bhoga sampada. This one. Sila is the source of spiritual wealth. When you keep your sila, spiritual wealth will be there. Why? Where do you renew your precept? Huh? You do it at the altar, isn't it? You come to the temple, isn't it? Or you ask a Dhamma teacher or a monk to guide you, isn't it? That's why you chant, isn't it? You come to this place, you sure learn the spiritual teaching, isn't it? That's why it's a source of spiritual wealth. If you don't renew your precept, you will not have opportunity to listen to Dhamma. Don't have opportunity to do the ten meritorious action. That's why all these are what they call puja, pre and post puja that the Buddha actually prescribed under his teaching. Before you start a Dhamma session, you must have all this puja. So when you understand, then you know the importance of sila. If I have sila, it's the source of spiritual happiness, source of spiritual wealth, then I can receive the teaching. Then the last one is what? Silena sukanti nibuti yanti. Means, precept is the source of spiritual peacefulness of mind. That nibbana cessation, you can realize it. So when you keep precept, this three things grow in you. There is this joy, spiritual wealth, and spiritual peacefulness of mind. If without this, you cannot meditate. That's why the teaching is sila, samadhi, and prana. It's explained in this book. If you don't have sila, samadhi, you cannot keep it. When you have sila, you have joy, you have spiritual wealth, and you have spiritual peacefulness of mind. That's why you can meditate. That's all. That's why to have samadhi, you must have sila. Then to be able to develop the training of the practice, which is sila, samadhi, and panya. With sila, you develop samadhi, then wisdom will naturally arise. But for you to have this condition, you must have dana. That's why the Buddha always teach dana, sila, samadhi, and panya. Why? Dana is generosity. This is what normal Buddhists do when they start. They offer dana, they make donation, they help in whatever activity that can bring about like joy, relieve people's suffering and all those things. So when you cultivate dana parami, you reap what you sow, means in future you will be blessed with all this wealth, spiritual wealth, and also dana parami love. Because the more you give, the more you receive. So this dana parami is very important to prepare you for receiving the condition to meditate. If you don't have anapanasati, means you have financial problem, you don't have time for meditation, I tell you. You already worry about your finance. You worry about your commitment and all things. You wait for time to come and cultivate, listen to Dhamma, help out. You don't have time. That's why you must have anapanasati. Then at least the anapanasati bring forth the causes and conditions for you to have sufficient materialistic wealth. Or what they call the dana merits that generate this type of panami. Like this line, our Kalyanamitta, most of them have good dana panami because they are actually already in a very favorable position to actually cultivate the Dhamma, learn the Dhamma. They don't have to worry about the four basic needs, understand? Like the basic need of food, shelter, and all those things, they don't have to worry. And they tend to have the good panami to have enough funds for their whatever life activity and the way they want to live their life. So dana is very important. From dana, you have good condition to cultivate this teaching. Then you Once you understand the importance of this teaching, then you determine to cultivate sila, leading to samadhi, then wisdom. That's why the whole teaching, in fact, sila, samadhi, and panya is the noble eightfold path. It's the same. Okay? Yeah. This one, today's talk will be recorded. You will send the link to Jayanta. You will send it to your In fact, awareness meditation is very different from thought-based meditation. Thought-based meditation, you focus, you concentrate. Then you use your thought to look for things. You follow method, technique. Then you do. Who is the doer? Who is the meditator? The thought. When the thought is active, how can you be aware? How can you be mindful? You just need to inquire, you understand. It's like in life. As a human being, we can only do one thing at a time. Okay? What is it that most people do? They think a lot and they are most of the time lost in thought, heedless, worry about life. Planning, thinking, complaining, then inside chattering, daydreaming, dialoguing. When you are doing all this, how can you be mindful? How can you be aware of what is going on within nature, within the moment? So either you silence your mind and stop all this thinking, so that you can be aware indeed to know what is going on in life. True. The question is, how can you silence and not think? Because you all have not trained yourself to develop this awareness-based meditation. You understand? When you have trained and developed this ability to be aware, the free mind doesn't think. It's just aware. And what is the awareness? Your true mind, your true nature, is tranquility, is stillness, awareness. This is finished. Of course, there is also peacefulness, understand? Serene. So all these are words, but not until you realize it, you can never understand the difference. Your one is actively thinking, agitated, reacting, stirring. All the mental movement, this is what thought is all about. When your thought is active, how can you silence your mind to be aware? When you silence your mind without thought, when you are fully aware, you can be aware of all of nature's movement, activity, you know. And that is meditation. That is what the Buddha teaches, awareness, sati, standing aware. just aware, no need to think. Walking aware, everything you do. Sati sampajana. Every action, every movement in the present moment, aware. That is mindfulness. Ever mindful, constantly meditating. Okay? So, hopefully you are not frightened by all this. This is very different from what you are used to learn. But when you have the understanding, you will wake up. Yeah, what am I doing all this while following all the meditation? And what are the people teaching you? They ask for method and technique. Yeah. The question is method and technique of meditation? It's just a series of instruction to do something, isn't it? Like rising falling. That's how. This is mindful of the abdomen rising, falling. Then later on they say, don't verbalize, don't use the word on the self. Then they say, no. Then, no, thinking, thinking, thinking. Pain, pain, pain. This is vocalization again, understand? All these are methods and techniques that they teach. Of course, I got no comment. I mean, people have their way, have their understanding. If they think that way, it can bring them to realize the truth, well and good. But to me, it's creating a lot of verbalization, a lot of thought activity. Then all the so-called object of meditation also same. Because these are all series of instructions and object of meditation to actually train the mind. But we fail to understand. Yeah, this has nothing to do with Noble Eightfold Path. Understand? That's why the Fourth Noble Truth says the meditation as taught by the Buddha is the Noble Eightfold Path. You cultivate this, you will lead to the end of all suffering. But all the method and technique don't lead you to that, understand? Their problem is, I hope it's recorded. The problem is that they cannot silence their mind. You understand? Means what? Their mind heedlessly keep on thinking, understand? So they cannot become peaceful, quiet. That's why you go for meditation, they say focus, concentrate. Or they give you a series of instructions to do things, method and technique. This is to numb the mind, to train the mind so that it does not wander off. Yeah, when you focus, it's like applied thought. That sustains the thought, that stay there, the object of meditation, like the breath or any of it, stay there. Then you have less thought. Then you think, wow, this is good, peaceful, calm. But this is a conditioned state. Energy you will build up. It's not a free mind. And most of the time, you are hardly aware. Even when you are aware, thought is active around. That's why that way of teaching, I don't know, because it has been popularly accepted since don't know how long ago until now. From what the Buddha taught, basically, anapanasati, which is mindfulness of the in and breath, only mindfulness, nothing else. And the four foundations of mindfulness as obviously, and the awareness. It has become method, technique, object of meditation, and teacher, understand? Who's teacher's method? Who's teacher's technique? Yes, the five jhana factor. I don't know. You may ask that. Because the one that actually explained this, you heard of Visuddhi Marga? Who is the author? Buddha Bosa. You know who is he? He's a very, very well-respected Brahmin. Hindu tradition. So when he translated the Visuddhi Marga, the seven stages of purification, he was an authority, you know, and people loved him so much. And he incorporated a lot of Hindu teaching. That's why inside the Visuddhi Marga, the 40 meditation object is there, the jhana all there, the five jhana factor, vitaka, vichara. Once you focus your mind, apply thought and sustain that thought, it's still thought based, sustain it, you will experience pity. Why? We have no not my thinking and stuff, all thought killed into one point. You know, you apply the thought and you sustain the thought. Then when pity arises, you feel good. It's spiritual calmness, peacefulness. So you thought, this is meditation, good. But you want it repeated, very difficult. So they continue to focus, concentrate, until their pity become very strong, very stable. Then they break away from pity. They break away from vitaka vichara. Means no need to apply thought, no need to sustain thought. Then they can freely be in a state of pity. Then they develop until they become very calm, very quiet. Then they experience sukha, which is peacefulness. The mind really very peaceful. In the early day, I went through all this. Then after that, the final judging factor is ekagata, one-pointedness of mind. Means the mind stay there, one-pointedness, no movement. But the energy will build up. That's why they do jhana, they push up the energy. Some use it to retake the power. Otherwise, they got no way to release the energy, the thought energy. Very strong, very powerful. So, if you look at the jhana factor, of all the five, which one is the enlightenment factor? The seven factor of enlightenment, which one? Only pity, isn't it? The rest of the enlightenment factor is not there. Sati is not there, understand or not?
Interestingly, like, vichara is a million vichara.
You see, vitaka is to apply that thought. Then you sustain that thought. When you sustain that thought, it's not virya. Virya is a spiritual zeal, spiritual tenacity. Means this one is a spiritual tenacity or zeal, the interest to meditate. That's why the seventh factor of enlightenment, the first one is what? Sati. Realize it not? The first enlightenment factor. You must have sati, otherwise you cannot continue. The second enlightenment factor is what? Dhamma vijaya. Investigate the Dhamma. So without sati, you cannot investigate Dhamma. Sati will bring about the silent mind. The ability to be quiet, to be peaceful, so that you are creative. Then you can investigate the Dhamma, then you are mindful, you are aware. You can observe, you can see how your mind stirs. Then you can look at the essential Dhamma that the Buddha did. Dhamma Padawas has one and two. If I develop heedlessness, if I act, speak and think with a heedless mind, that has the evil roots of greed, hatred and delusion, then suffering will follow me. Like the food that follow the like the wheel that follow the poop of the car. So all this you put to check, you investigate. You get anger, the evil roots of greed, hatred and delusion, the suffering arises. Yeah, you are heedless. Obviously, you suffer. Then you have the evil root, you break the precept, you commit all the negative. But verse 2, if I know the danger of the three evil roots and the what they call heedless behavior, then I determine to act, speak and think with a heedful mind, means with heedfulness, free of the evil roots of greed, hatred and delusion. Then happiness will follow me like a shadow that never leaves. And you can investigate. Then you realize, oh yeah. When I don't have the evil root, when I am heedful, I aware, I don't make mistakes. I can keep my precept, I can develop wisdom, I can have a spiritual faculty to cultivate. Then I realize, hey, it's time of the investigation. Then Sapa Papasa Akarana say, Dhamma Padavos 1-3. Then Apamadavaga, verse 21, 22, 23, say, heedfulness is the father of death. The heedless never dies. Whereas heedlessness is the father of the dead. The heedless dies. So I check, once I am heedful, I aware, I never die. Because I can see the Dhamma, I can awaken, I can realize all this. Then when you investigate into all this, you realize it's time after investigation, what happened? Your faith in the Buddha and his teaching become unshakable. That's how virya arises. That virya is through investigation. then you realize this teaching is so beautiful. That's why it really drives you to cultivate. So when there is virya, you cultivate sati, awareness, until very stable. And then piti is the fourth enlightenment factor. Then when you cultivate piti, it becomes very stable. It become, the mind becomes very quiet and very still. Then you realize paucity. Paucity is actually the tranquility of mind, the silent mind, the true mind. Your mind must be a free mind in the state of tranquility. No movement at all. And that is paucity. That is the fifth enlightenment factor. Then when you stabilize that, it becomes samadhi. Then you see a samadhi, you can see things as they are, the direct seeing. The insight into phenomena, you awaken. That's how you develop wisdom. When wisdom is there, it will make the mind equanimous. The equanimity is not through a conditioned state, it's through a free mind that has wisdom. That's how the seventh factor enlightenment comes to be. The last factor enlightenment is equanimity, upekkha. This is how it should be developed. That's why the jhana factor, now a lot of people come out with a new teaching, two types of jhana. You heard of them? Two types of jhana. No, no, no. That one is form and formless mind state. The jhana, now they are coming out with a new theory. One is the traditional jhana, thought based on. The second one is awareness based jhana. They also experience the same, they say, jhanic state, but with awareness. Of course, I got no comment for that type of explanation, because the two are so different.
Is it close to vipassana?
It's not to say it's close to vipassana. You see, the word vipassana, you must understand. What is vipassana? There are two words, isn't it? We is the three characteristics. Pasana is to insight into. So anything that insight into the three characteristics is vipassana. Understand? So how can you teach vipassana? You understand? It's not something that you can teach. It is something that you have to develop to insight into it. So whatever that can bring about this ability to insight into the three universal characteristics of anicca, dukkha, and anatta is vipassana. So vipassana is not a method, it's not a technique, it's a cultivation. When you understand the cultivation, you silence your mind, you develop that awareness, then this awareness can see things as they are and insight into phenomena. And this is, to me, the real vipassana. Not the one that people define. When you do anapanasati, which the Buddha do, no more vipassana, it becomes samatha. When you do something else, which the Buddha never do, it becomes vipassana. To me, I cannot reconcile all this. To me, I just let it be. This is what people understand. Let them teach and let them share. Because that is what they understand and believe in. So, don't try to like argue with them or whatever. This, like the Buddha said, the Dhamma is pachetana. You know what is pachetana? You charge the salutation to the Dhamma. This can be realized by the ones, each for themselves. Only the ones can understand this teaching. Because it's this Dhamma is well expounded by the Buddha. Understand? Swakato Bhagavata Dhamma. Then this Dhamma is what? Sanditiko, Akalko, Ehipasiko, Opanaiko, then Pachetana, Vinditako, Inuhiti. So when you come to your understanding, you know what this Dhamma is, then why do you worry? You don't have to believe what I say or what the Buddha said. Because when you do it correctly, you will realize. And the wise one will realize it. And the Buddha everywhere already teaches heedfulness, apamana, sati, mindfulness, dhammaparayana 23, the constantly meditating, ever mindful, they will realize the born-free nirvana. So who is the constantly meditating, ever mindful? Then heedfulness. When you combine these two, you become heedful. Then it matches with the Dhammapada verse 21. Heedfulness is the path to the deathless. The heedful never die. That's why people don't investigate into this Dhammapada verse. They cannot understand. And this teaching, I don't know, over the years, I don't know what happened. He has become so different from what I understand. What I understand is still the theoretical teaching of the Buddha. But I understand it differently, and I teach it differently. And I don't want to get into unnecessary misunderstanding or argument. What for? You don't have to like insist you are right or you are wrong. The Dhamma is Paccetana. Find it out yourself. You believe yours is the correct one. No harm, go ahead. I rejoice if you really can insight into the Dhamma and realize the truth. Because cultivation is up to the individual. But if you don't have the right understanding, I realize it next to impossible to realize, to awaken. Because without mindfulness, without sati, there is no way. If you are not heedful, there is no way. You see, the word, when the Buddha passed away, apamadena sampadeta. You know what the meaning is? Strive on with heedfulness. You know what's the meaning of? It's not strive on before you have heedfulness. You must strive on with heedfulness. With heedfulness only, you determine with the virya to do it. A lot of people say, strive, I determine, I strive. But without heedfulness, you determine for what? And then strive on, the word is with heedfulness. You don't strive on before you develop the heedfulness. It took them so many years to understand that. That's why the word, if you don't cultivate, you cannot get the deep meaning out. But when you cultivate, the word will stand up on it. Like that clear to you or not. Everywhere in the Pali canon or whatever, the Pali word stand out very clearly. Like the word dukkha. I don't learn from anybody, but I know what that took is. I saw it in my mundane mind. And when my true mind is silent, I develop the understanding. And the aggregates of mind also, you don't see it, you cannot understand. Then you maybe follow what is commonly taught. Like the four aggregates of mind. Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, Vinyana. What is Sankara? That word, a lot of English words combined still don't describe it. Sankara is all your mind activity and more, everything that your mind can do is Sankara. And the content of functional, including Vedana and Sanya, is Sankara. Not easy to understand unless you have the mindfulness, the awareness to see it. Then automatically you understand. You realize, hey, this is what the teaching is all about. So everything that I share is still from the teaching, no difference. But the way I understand it is different, the way I explain it is different. So it's up to the individual. Initially, I don't blame most of you. You ask Jayanta, he came to my Thursday class for 3 Thursdays. He cannot understand. He find it very weird. He came and see me. What you share on all the Pali about what I learned. Completely the Pali. It took him a long time. But luckily he has faith. Then slowly you develop the understanding. The other thing that you have to inquire is if the teaching is correct. If you have been following the right teaching, it should bring from the way and it should transform you. It should change you completely, character-wise, personality-wise, awareness-wise. You must have the embodiment of the Noble Eightfold Path in it. You check whether you have. Do you have sati? Do you know what is sati? Are you mindful? Are you heedful throughout the day? Or are you more just like feeling, thinking, planning, worrying about I am only? Check! Okay? Because most human beings, they are actively using the thinking mind, the mundane mind. The thought is very active. When your thought is very active, you cannot be mindful, you cannot be aware. Like I said, you can only do one thing at a time. Either you are completely silent and aware, or lost in thought. Lost in thought means what? Preoccupied with what you are thinking. When you are preoccupied with what you are thinking, how can you be aware of the reality? Of what is going on in life? I need to be completely silent to observe, then I can see the movement. That then I can understand why my eyes curl, how anger come to be, how fear come to be. If I don't silent, I cannot. Then I will use thought. Ayoh, that guy made me angry. Ayoh, because that thing caused me to have fear. Fear the unknown. So you blame all the external. And who is telling you all this? It's the thought. But when you are aware, different. Your thought is not telling you anything. The awareness that is aware is with the thing. Then fear ceases. Anger ceases. Then you realize, hey, how come they disappear? Means they are not intrinsic in you. They are dependent on you. They condition. And according to the Buddha's teaching. Then I realize, all these mind states, sankhara, is the mundane mind, not the true mind. That's why they are not intrinsic. They come and they go. Dependent, originating, condition arising, causal phenomena, from memory, views, opinion, conditioning. You stir your mind. That's how I saw that. That's how I can share and teach. You check the teachings, they don't describe all these things. But the basic essential dhamma are there. So, develop the faith, give it a try, no harm. Like I said, if you have done the correct one, you will have progress, understand that, and become different. But it has not changed you, you have to give yourself a chance. Try it out, no harm. Worst comes to worst, it doesn't help you, understand that. Then don't care about it. But it is really something that is the truth. When you got it, I tell you, overnight you change, you become so different. That's why now on the website, a lot of people from overseas, they have never met me before. They hear, they understand. And they wrote to me, they rejoice. So a lot of things is happening now. Okay? So I will use our version. If you don't mind. Or you want to use your version up to you. It's okay. Okay. So let us rejoice with all the wholesomeness that we have developed today. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Now let us delegate and share these merits with all beings, starting with the devas. Akasata cha bhumata devanaga mahindika punyantam anumoditva ciram rakkantu loka sasana ittavata chayamehi sampadam punya sampadam sate deva anumodantu Sapa sampati siniya idam menyatinam bodhu sukita hontu nyatayo idam menyatinam bodhu sukita hontu nyatayo idam menyatinam bodhu sukita hontu nyatayo Deho asatu kāyena sāsa sampati hetu ca
Pito bhavantu loko cha raja bhavantu dhammiko Timina punya kamena mame bala samagamo Satang samagamo hotu Yawa nivana patiya Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Okay, thank you so much for all your faith, confidence and support. Sadhu.
This day,
Sadhu,
we just went to Katolik Kuala Lumpur to celebrate together with us for 10 years later. Thank you. 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 Thank you